Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
I absolutely love that first firing up of the grill on a warm summer evening. Do you or someone else in your home take grilling as seriously as I do? The Burger Perfection Pack is an incredible deal for just $99.99. This exclusive package includes 20 of Omaha Steaks mouthwatering steak burgers. That's four of each of their finest burgers. Pure ground filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. Only available at omahasteaks.com. Impress your next dinner party or family cookout with exclusive products not available at grocery stores. All backed by Omaha Steaks' 100% money-back guarantee. Get ready for grilling season with the mouth-watering Omaha Steaks Burger Perfection Pack, plus 8 free Wagyu Smash Burgers for just $99.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, and as a bonus, use promo code YUM to get $35 off your order. That's $35 off with promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So fast to freedom, start tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for April 28th, 2026. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. If you want to donate to the show, you can click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast and you set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, we are back here to talk about what traditionally would be Dead or Alive, but now we are in the new building in the new era of Golden Coliseum. Before we get into it, bud, how have you been this last week?
I'm good. I'm well, I should say. I don't feel like I have any dramatic life updates. I'm really into the NHL playoffs this year. What's your gauge on the NHL playoffs? Because I'm watching more hockey than basketball right now, which is very abnormal for me.
Well, here's the funny thing. Was a huge hockey fan growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my dad had season tickets to Reunion Arena level hockey fan. And my dad grew up in suburban Chicago and then other parts of the Midwest, so hockey was always kind of a thing, especially like the Blackhawks. So he was really into the fact that there was a sport when my brother and I were of a young impressionable age that kind of came along that was not football, that also it was something that he greatly kind of enjoyed. And there was the little bit of the mystique, and also the fact that, I mean, Dallas hockey was kind of the first Sun Belt kind of attempt. So I was a huge Stars fan growing up, but when the year-long lockout happened when I was in college, that was when I completely fell away from hockey, and I'll dip back in for Olympics, like Four Nations, and then when the Stars really kind of go on a run, and I know that they've been a very strong team over the last like 3 or 4 years, really kind of the last few years of Jamie Benn and the rise of Wyatt Johnson, but I don't really like day in, day out follow hockey other than when the Stars get going, because it's always kind of funny when Dallas Fort Worth has to reconcile with a hockey team being the best team in town.
Yeah, I love that. I do not feel like I have a team. As long as I've lived in Chicago, the Blackhawks have always been very bad. I would love for them to be good, but every year I pop into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Every year I really enjoy it, and I found the first round this year to be exceptional. But we are not here. Contrary to popular belief, this is not a hockey podcast. This is not. I know a lot of people tuned in thinking it was. It's a Dragon Gate podcast, and I would say, I don't know, for maybe the first time in 3 months, I'm kind of itching to talk about modern-day Dragon Gate.
Yeah, so let's just get right into it then. Golden Coliseum is the replacement for Dead or Alive, and it was this last Sunday from Aichi Budokan. Just like off the top, like big picture, just kind of takeaway from this now like kind of historical Golden Week show that is going through an evolution as Dragon Gate is not going to the replacement arena of Dolphins Arena. They're going to the older and smaller Aichi Prefectorial Budokan. They did 2462 here, a significant drop from the show from last year, but not necessarily like a surprise. But big picture,
let's talk about that number real quick, because I found it to be, given the size of the venue, I found it to be a good number. I mean, the building looked good. It's nice to come on here and not have to have a conversation about
it. It sounded loud.
It sounded loud. The building looked good. It's nice that we don't have to have a conversation about house lights and why they shouldn't be used on a major show. This was something that I think Dragon Gate is, you know, especially outside of Kobe World, really struggled to do over the last few years, which is present a visually impressive big show and an impressive big show from an audio level as well. So, yeah, we're looking at, you know, Dead or Alive 2019. So pre-pandemic, that show did 4,500 people. The Dead or Alives over the last few years have floated around 3,500 people. We're down to 24 on this one. But I think getting 2,000 people in any building in 2026 for Dragon Gate, not based on the economy, but based on the Dragon Gate creative, is an accomplishment in and of itself. I think they should be thankful that they drew the number they did. But given that it is a scaled down venue, I don't know if you could fit 3,500 people in this venue if you wanted to.
I don't know if you can fit 3,000 or much more than that. Yeah.
And I know the advanced ticket sales were pretty strong. Now, again, those are advanced ticket sales for a much smaller building than Dolphins was. But given the context of what this was, it does seem like the type of night where, at least at the box office, you can leave with your head a little bit higher than it might have been, say, for some of the Corkin numbers or some of the Kobe numbers earlier this year. This seemed like a mild victory for Dragon Gate at the box office.
Yeah, and I guess, like, and we'll get much more into this, like, closing out the show, the competing Shima talk show, like, there was a little bit in my head going, like, all right, like, are we going to see like a visible difference? Like, I expected this to be about a 2,500 ticket show, given how everything was trending. But everything looked really good on it. I mean, it is a older venue, and it does have like that traditional style, like balcony that you know, like we see so many of those house shows that they're in these buildings, and the only thing that's in the balcony is the hard cam and the T-shirts that are on display. And it was nice to see it looking very kind of full here, and it was a loud crowd. And I think for the way that we felt like going into, and really this entire build for the Steel Cage Warfare match, the crowd helped a whole lot. I feel like for a match that will not go down in the books as one of the matches up there of like the 2016 edition or anything like that, but the crowd being firmly behind Hamare as he gets backstabbed, as he was fated always to be backstabbed eventually by Shun Skywalker, it added a level to a show that I don't know necessarily that the program deserved that kind of result that was kind of delivered by the Aichi crowd here. I felt like that kind of knocked it out of the park with the crowd being like so invested when, like, you know, I did not think that the crowd was going to be as into it like this, but this crowd was into everything on the show, which I thought was a big kind of one that helps. It helps the promotion that hasn't necessarily been doing great to have a show that looks great, the audience looks great, and it sounds great, and you still kind of have some of those touchstones like a traditional Dragon Gate Golden Week cage match and a killer Twin Gate match after that as well. So I feel like it's a very kind of easy show to kind of recommend and give a thumbs up for, just for the fact of that it's not going to be like the outside of the tag team match, like much of the show being like end of the year kind of fodder. But I feel like it was a really kind of comfortable show kind of coming away from it.
Well, nothing annoyed me, which is a massive improvement over a lot of the shows that we've been watching as of late. I mean, that's a win in and of itself. I mean, we can dive into the cage match right away. You know, we're going to do the Golden Coliseum review up top. We'll talk about the Magnum Tokyo and the Dragon Daya news at the end of the show. I'm sure we'll have fun along the way as well. But, you know, to your point about the crowd, and you tell me if you think this is far too much of a galaxy brain take, but I feel like the crowd's level of involvement or enjoyment in that main event, and specifically the Shun and Hamari stuff. Can you hear that car horn on my mic?
No, I can't.
Oh my God, I don't know what's happening. I got my window cracked open just a little bit, and there is a horn war going on outside. I'm glad that's not, that was very distracting. I'm glad that's not coming through on the microphone. But
the power of a parabola microphone.
God, that, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. It can't be good what's going on out there, but I'm glad it's not coming through. It's finally here. That was like a 30-second horn honk. That was crazy. So, you know, if you tell me if you think this is too much of a galaxy brain take, but in terms of the cage match and the level of crowd involvement, and to some degree, I would imagine the level of crowd enjoyment, it actually feels like an indictment on Gaja Dokuro again. And there have been plenty of things to indict them for this year, and this is yet another one, because it was a match that, you know, Kakuta got out of there very quickly. I was surprised at just how little focus or spotlight or shine Kato got. And with Kota Minoura, he sort of had the match that I expected him to have with the Ishin misfire and some of the Hamari stuff. And then his elimination just happened to be a little bit sooner than I thought it was going to be. But this is a match that was built around the drama of Saipatra, the star power of Shun Skywalker, and the potential of Hamari. And I leave this match intrigued by the direction, a match that I relatively enjoyed. I would say on the lower end of the great Dragon Gate cage matches, but also given the build of this and what the hurdles that it would have had to have climbed, I wasn't expecting this. Yeah, it, at the very least, it achieved its goal. I don't know if it overachieved, but it got the job done in the end. This horrific build, this horrific era appears to finally be over, and we got to a point. But I don't think this match did anything for the standing of Gaja Dokuro. At least it didn't with me.
No, and I felt like that as soon as the way that the stipulations ran out the way it did, and the fact that like Gaja Dokuro, like there is a disconnect internationally, but about like the overall specter of black t-shirt heel groups in Japan, and like the reality of Gaja Dokuro being an incredibly popular group at this point, like at least by the autograph lines and stuff like that, that I don't feel like that really, like when everything was laid out the way it was, there was no risk whatsoever for any of the Gaja Dokuro guys to lose, other than if they were going like, oh shit, nuclear option, we're going to go off all aboard Kota Minoura finally. Like that was like the only way that you could really, I felt like, rationally say, oh, I believe that Gaja did that, Saipatra was going to escape this. So there was a bit of wounded duck kind of energy about this match, and then you had to go like, okay, so what's this match going to be about? And really, like, I know that like it was the conclusion I came to a bit on the show last week, but like there really was one kind of result here, and it was time to do the split of Hamari and Shun Skywalker, and Hamari to kind of get shoved out of the nest, and now it's time for Hamari's next kind of big step, and Hamari getting kind of proven the adage about Shun Skywalker getting proven right, that it just took a long time for Shun Skywalker to stab Hamari in the back. Like it, there only kind of became one kind of match format for them to tell, and I felt like it was like the right time. I thought that Hamari took took command enough of the moment, Shun, for how Shun is and has been since the departure of Zebratz and kind of the tweener shift, it worked out for what it is. And I feel like you kind of now have this moment of like, all right, now at the very least, Hamare is going to get a lot of focus on him in the second half of the year, just for the sake of the fact that like now we've seen what's happened after people get their get screwed over by Shun Skywalker, right? Like, so like there's now an anticipation about like, okay, what's going to be next for Hamare kind of coming out from this, and did they executed on that kind of story, and it's not necessarily a match quality kind of cage match. I thought the plunder stuff was kind of wild how much they were able
okay,
to
get. Hold on. I want to get to the match. I've got some other thoughts here. Yeah. So, okay. Question for you, because I'm struggling to figure out how to interpret this. And it's something that I just entirely ignored in the written review because I really wasn't sure how to process the end of the match and sort of the conflicting theory from the Discord, from those that were watching with Japanese commentary to those that were watching with English commentary. Shun Skywalker and Hamare are the last two left of the match. As I predicted, Kakuta goes out first. You get, I forget in what order, of Kato, Cielo, Minora. And so you're left with Hamare and Shun Skywalker.
Kakuta, Cielo, Kato, then the big mists attack from Minora, getting himself out, leaving Hamare versus Shun and Gaja Dokuro being saved officially and Saipatra being cursed. So they left it as the Shun Mare explodes, just like the Kobe World main event in 2023.
So, yeah, so you're down to those two. So we know the Saipatra is going to disband, which, you know, we can probably have a separate conversation again. I mentioned it last week of, you know, between High End and Big Hug and now Saipatra, you have these units that feel like historical failures. And at least with High End, I mean, I guess at least is probably the wrong word. Unfortunately, High End was around for a very long time. You know, it's a unit that began with Kaisuke Okuda as a member and you know, Yamato during when maybe the least interesting portion of his career. A lot of things going on there that I just didn't like with that unit. But with Big Hug and Saipatra specifically, you have these units that had major stars attached to them that only lasted 6 months, and that feels like a colossal creative failure that at some point we should probably have a bit of a larger conversation on. But in terms of the finish of the match,
okay,
it is, you know, Skywalker going to the top of the cage, staring down at Hamare, letting him climb up to the top rope to where it looks like he's going to have a chance, maybe not to capture the flag, but to at least wrestle Shun Skywalker off the top of the cage. And right before he's able to do that, Shun grabs the flag. Hamare loses his hair. He has to be the youngest person to lose his hair. I think he's a year younger than Kento was in 2022. And if not, then, you know, at the very least, you think about the reference that we spoke about SB Kento with in 2022. And I would attach that same level of reference to Hamare. So he's in good company there. But my question about the ending of the
Kento
match is,
Kento was 22.
And Hamare is 21.
Hamari's 21 until September.
Wow. Until September. Good Lord. He does not wrestle like a 21-year-old, does he?
No, he does not. No, his birthday is the 30th of August. So yeah, this September, he turns 22.
So think about that real quick. You know, I was so surprised, given that the build of this cage started with Kato and Cielo, and there was a point in time where maybe people that just thought they were going to have an Apuestas match on this show, or that the Apuestas match would have those two largely factored into it. They didn't really do anything big in this match. I don't really feel like their story progressed at all. I feel like this
Cielo,
was a...
Yeah. Cielo, after the match, cut a promo saying like that he's continuing their feud. And there was a bit of fighting between Cielo and Kato towards the end, and that was the... and that's... They played into each other into the flag raise, but then... As soon as Cielo was out, there was like a missed powder attack, and that was basically it for Kato, and he was done. And that was really Kato. I was expecting him to have like a really big cage match, and this to be kind of the big one of the big stories is like, oh yeah, Kato went into the cage and just destroyed, and just look at him now. And he would kind of, I feel like him and Cielo were 5 and 6 of the most important. Actually, no, Kakuta's least important.
Yeah, I mean, Kakuta was like Togi Makabe on a Road to show on this show. Yeah. He pieced out immediately. He did nothing, which it's your Open the Dream Gate champion, by the way. I would be slightly concerned about that. But, you know, I'm going to make an odd comparison point here, but doesn't it seem like Kato, in the context of this cage match, should have had a 3 or 4 minute period where he felt like Kane at the 2001 Royal Rumble, where we're all going like, wow, look at the way that Kato manhandled Hamare and then Cielo and then Shun. And then he probably should have had some dedicated time with Cielo in the cage. And I don't really feel like Kato, in his first truly big main event, came away feeling like a bigger star. Now, Cielo, I don't really look at him like that. I don't think he's been presented like that. But Kato, it's clear that they have big plans for it. I don't really feel like he was elevated here.
No. I would say he felt like a bigger star coming out of the Triangle Gate ladder match last year than he did coming out of this match. And I'm like, honestly, like I was kind of in the back of my mind going like, okay, this is kind of the match that we're going to see the hidden little dirty sicko that Yoshiki Kato is, and like how like people in the cage, like that's where like Shingo Takagi for so many years got to scratch that itch, and like you get to see some like really kind of wild stuff, and he's just kind of not there, other than a helping out a powerbomb onto high chairs that have planks across of it, which smart way to get around not being able to get a table in, doing the planks through it. That worked out there, but that's kind of the only thing I have for him in this entire match. And other than the fact that there was an insane amount of plunder in the cage by the time that the cooldown phase was over, like it was a ludicrous amount of chairs in the cage this year, which was kind of wild because they did a giant chair pyramid towards the end.
They did. But I was a little taken aback by that. I do feel like if there was one mistake that was made in this match, it was just the lack of things for Yoshiki Kato to latch onto. Because I think Cielo, I don't really get the impression that he's been presented as anything above a future Twin or Triangle Gate champion. But Kato, they clearly have bigger ideas for. But I bring all of this up because, you know, those guys are much older than Hamare is. And for him to only be 21 and to, you know, I don't know if it's fair to say that he ate their lunch in this match when you look at the young three guys in this match, but just the way that Hamare is able to command himself and the presence that he brings to matches like this, you know, this is becoming a guy that has a pretty special resume already of really big matches. When you think about like the finals of Rey de Parejas last year and his performance here and some of the stuff that he's done on the upper end of the card with Shun Skywalker, it's just impressive the way that he's been able to assimilate himself in this environment so easily. So Shun's at the top of the cage, Hamare's climbing, Shun takes the flag staring right at him. I am unable to tell thus far, and I don't know if this is Shun Skywalker losing a mile or two off of his fastball and no longer being the dynamic character worker that he was, whereas 2 or 3 years ago he might have been able to perfectly nail whatever he was going for, but I can't tell if it was Skywalker being sympathetic towards Hamare, the man that he's, you know, fostered essentially since his first day in the company, or if it is him rubbing salt in the wound of Hamare and we're getting ready for a pretty heated feud between those two. I do not know what he was going for in the finish to that match.
Yeah, because it was such a brutal sequence that finally puts Hamare out for giving Shun the ability to basically take 2 minutes to go up the cage. It is a avalanche blaster off the second rope, followed by an SSW and then a kill shot, chair shot. And then it really, like, after Hamare completely empties the tank, Shun just kind of goes like, no, I'm just at a completely different level than you are. And it was like the adage of maybe Shun taught Hamare all Hamare knew, but Shun clearly was not like that. And It did not necessarily feel as much of the direct backstab that we've gotten with Shun before, but instead, like, this kind of plays off like, what was Shun in the post match disappointed that Hamare would not finish the job, and like that Hamare clearly got Saipatra into this kind of situation, and then when it's back to one on one, I think like the only situation that Shun would have accepted is if from Hamare is if Hamare was the one to beat him, and instead Hamare is not at that level. And I think that that makes a really interesting kind of situation for Hamare. I do kind of feel like that in the kind of way that Shun Skywalker, it's interesting, like how like the people he betrays remain in his orbit very intensely for a bit, and then they just kind of drift kind of away. I do anticipate there to be a interesting interaction between Hamare and Shun, especially in the lead up to Kobe World and like that. And I don't know, maybe it turns into a situation that this kind of is Hamare's next step, or is this kind of a situation like where equally it's him taken down to the struts and then kind of rebuild going on maybe the Bravegate run that he still hasn't had a Bravegate win, you know, like is that kind of the direction for it? I just think that it's a real vote of confidence, but Hamare here in this kind of position before even starting his third year pro wrestling. And, you know, there's a lot of real interesting kind of situations you could have with him. I mean, like, is it too much of a waste of Skywalker, or is it likely that we're looking at Skywalker versus Hamare in a special singles match at Kobe World?
I think that's the betting odds favorite. I mean, that's what I would do, because after this show, I'm convinced that they're doing Yoshioka versus Kakuta again at World.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be Shun versus Hamare in your match before intermission, and then a twin gate match, and then Kakuta versus Yoshioka in the main event. And that feels like a safe bet. And I think that's probably a match that Shun should win. Yeah, I don't really feel like
Hamare should go away.
Do you think, I mean, I don't, that's a very interesting discussion as we talk about SB Kento getting his head shaved in 2022 and comparing him to Hamare. And not that I know of any similar personality traits between the two, but.
And not since anyway. Yeah, yeah.
If I was Dragon Gate and I turn the calendar back 4 years ago and go back to Fujiwara, Kento, Estrella, and Takuma Nishikawa, I'm not sure I'm interested in sending away my top prospect anywhere else ever again.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they seem to have other spots than Mexico now. I mean, I don't know, like, how much we really consider Gary Scheme of Things the kind of excursion that Junior had with that. But I do feel like that it's like, damn, this is like, if we're just thinking like pre-COVID 2019 U.S. Indies, this is like, oh yeah, no, like this is a great time for him. Like based on the States, he can do Bola, he can do all these things in the second half of the year. And it's like, no, that world doesn't exist anymore. We have to look towards the UK for like that kind of thing for him.
Well, that's the thing. What does he gain from being sent away? I'm not even sure with the current state of the wrestling environment that...
Just going away?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what that gets you at this point.
I think
you got to remember, I mean, this is a roster without BB Hulk. This is a roster without Ben K. It's a roster without Mochizuki Jr. It's a roster without UT. I'm not sure they want to send away a guy that at the very least you can have as an upper mid carder. They don't have the depth at this point to send anybody away. So if I've got a big show in September and a big show in November and a big show in January coming up, I'm not going to just voluntarily send away a guy that could reasonably be in important matches on those shows, given the injuries that are at stake with the roster, and you don't have Dragon Daya.
I thank you. That in my mind, you're talking about him going away in August. I think that given the overall kind of like situations over the next 3 months, I wouldn't be like so restrictive about future plans for his excursion with the fact of, I mean, like, he's going to be in the Shun Skywalker vortex, basically, up until Kobe World, if not after. I don't know if that necessarily means Shun Skywalker vortex, where like they try to, like, after the singles match, get back on the same footing, or if it's going to be more like that. But I don't think you look necessarily into, okay, is Hamare going to be in Triangle Gate matches in November as a reason not to send him on an excursion. I think this is the time. And I think that after facing Shun Skywalker at Kobe World, he should go away just for the sake of the fact that he will be 22, and you kind of want to see him to go from being, I mean, in a lot of ways, seeing kind of as like the teenage heartthrob or young guy, and for him to kind of go away, and then you can come back, and then he, at least at the very least, he goes away for a bit and he feels a little bit older, for lack of better terms. Like, that I think is the other thing about the excursion, is that he needs kind of not the whole Adam Cole needs to like physically like wait 5 years to hire Adam Cole because you think he looks like a 20-year-old kind of thing. But Hamare, I mean, for like a main event kind of thing, and like with these kind of positioning, they're looking at that for him. Like in the long term, maybe it is time for him to go away for a bit and then come back fresh, and then you put him into that main event and he at 22.
I'm very skeptical of that. I'm not sure that it benefits anybody to have him go away, but we will see as the summer progresses. I do agree that Skywalker versus Hamare seems like the lock for Kobe World right now. I do get wary just because Skywalker continues to be the oddity that he is. I do get wary that they're going to run with him without a unit for a while. And I think that's a really dangerous thing to do. I think that, you know, we saw this in 2019 with Shun and Ben K when they were a tandem, that there's just, I don't know, there are these little intricacies in this promotion that can't really be altered. And being a guy that's a lone wolf, or being in a tandem instead of at the very least a trio, or ideally a, you know, a quartet, you know, a unit, it just doesn't ever seem to do anybody any favors. And I do worry that, you know, as we close the books on April and we've got Kobe World 2.5 months away now, which is insane to think about, but we have Kobe World 2.5 months away. I do really worry that Skywalker is just going to be by himself, and he's going to work a limited house show schedule. And the TV matches that he's going to do are primarily, you know, Shun Skywalker versus Problem Dragon, and then Shun Skywalker versus Kimura, and then Shun Skywalker versus Jiro Shimbashi. And, you know, Maria will pop up in Kobe and we'll do Skywalker versus Maria. And he'll just do these odds and ends singles matches because he wants to be on his own for a little bit. I do think that would be a grave mistake. I think Skywalker, for the first time really since 2018, has some rehab that he needs to do. He has some things that he needs to figure out, and he's at risk of being knocked down a peg, I think, from a global standpoint in terms of the way that I think of him. Whereas, you know, for most of the 2020s, I've been able to say that the best wrestler not named Will Ospreay and the best wrestler not named Brian Danielson is Shun Skywalker, and that outside of maybe Pac and Jon Moxley, nobody understands their character in wrestling better than Shun Skywalker does. And I haven't felt that way since August. And I'm a little worried that, and this was my concern. I mean, Mike, we talked about this after Dangerous Gate in August, where I thought Skywalker had such a weird meta flat performance against Kakuta in that Dreamgate match. And I told you at the time, I went, man, this feels like he might have finally lost that touch a little bit. He might have flown too close to the sun. And then if you remember, and it's so funny where we're at now, when Saipatra first formed and we were getting those Cielo Trios matches where it was a healthy Cielo, Hamare, and Shun, and then Valletta came in and there was that whole Triangle Gate run that got aborted because of the Hamare injury, you know, our initial thought on Saipatra was, okay, fear not, Shun Skywalker's back. We should never doubt this guy. He's the man. Saipatra rocks. And it just tumbled downhill as soon as the calendar year started. And now I'm at a point where I kind of need Shun to show me that he's still the guy that I think he is. And I don't think he's going to be able to do that on his own. I think he needs a unit, and he needs a unit quickly.
Yeah, and I think that it's going to be a situation that, I mean, there's a lot of cleanup that needs to happen in the landscape. Saipatra, like, we'll have a deeper like Saipatra conversation probably on a future episode, but to me, a lot about Saipatra, like when they build up the unit very quickly, and it just could not stay healthy, and I think just at a certain point, just ready to kind of move on. And I mean, like, just imagine like it just kind of drifting along, like we don't know the next time or if ever Johnny Valletta comes back around here. So there's just like this kind of trio that is just kind of there. I think that like this is at a certain point, they just decided it was like the right decision. And I think that it kind of is, because I think that you know who is someone that we really have not had a ton of interaction with him since he came back from his injury, that I feel like unit landscape wise, the two people that I feel like have some stuff they can get back for and do, I think it's Shun Skywalker and Yuki Yoshioka. Like, there's some places where they need to go to for a couple places in this unit landscape that I feel like needs to kind of get to in a lot of ways.
Tanaka feels like he's at a point where you could put Tanaka anywhere and he'd succeed. I think as the Brave Gate run manifests into this historical thing, I do think we have to have our antennas up for once that Brave Gate run ends, which let's say he breaks the record at World against Dragon Kid, which is what I think is going to happen. And then he loses that title in August to whoever. He loses it in September to whoever. I would imagine that next Cork and Hall, Tanaka's turning on Yuki Yoshioka and we're getting heel Tanaka. That feels like the type of thing that we have to mentally prepare for. Maybe that's not what happens. I think you could slide him into any babyface unit existing or new, and I think he would pass with flying colors. Yoshioka, again, sort of in that Shun Skywalker spot, which it might be why they need each other. Is it just, 10 years into your career, you're a top dog for most of it, but time waits for no man, and it does feel like Dragon Gate needs these guys to be better than they are right now. And I think that includes Shun, and I think that includes Yoshioka, and I think that includes Kakuta, and I think that includes Strong Machine J. I think the Reiwa 6 are really struggling right now.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair thing to say about this. Any other thoughts you had on the cage match before we move on down the card?
I think, we kind of hinted at this earlier. I think it was the cage match that it needed to be. This is not the year for the tennis balls being shot at the cage and the wacky confetti explosions that they do to take guys down. This was a 6 month long heated feud between a very grimy brute force heel unit and opponents that were kind of the babyface version of that. This was not your hodgepodge. Hey, we're going to have a six-way cage match with wacky stakes because it's May and that's what we do. This was a cage match with reason, with purpose, and with storyline advancement. So luckily, because Dead or Alive is now Golden Coliseum, there's just going to be a type of person that is just going to entirely miss this, because they're going to miss the show name change, the different presentation, and it'll never be on their radar, even with the Twin Gate match that is starting to make the rounds. But I think for the type of person that is expecting maybe a wackier cage match, I would warn them, or I would adhere to the idea that that's maybe poor analysis, because I don't think this match called for it. And I think it would have been really odd. This was like the 2016 Berserk cage match, in that it was really focused and really heated and really serious, and it should have been, and that's okay. And we got through this, and God willing, the main event tenor of this company will change going forward. God willing. I mean, maybe we're lucky and Kakuta will drop the belt in June and we can just erase the whiteboard and go into something entirely new for Kobe World. That would be absolutely fantastic. But it got the job done, and I think most importantly, it was the match that it should have been.
Yeah. And at the very least, I think that now, like, coming out of it, like, this is the decision that I feel like with the six guys made the most sense, especially when you're like looking at what are you going to try to do for the rest of your 2026? What are you trying to do going into your summer? It feels like that it was the right time to get Hamare away from Shun Skywalker, and this felt like a deserved kind of way to get there. But that's not the match that
I'll put a bow on it this way. I disagree, because I still think they should have done Shun and Hamare versus Kame and Rita at Kobe World. And I think that in itself would have been a far bigger draw than whatever the Dreamgate match is going to be. But we're not going to get that. But God willing, we get Kame and Rita defending the Twin Gate belts at Kobe World.
Yeah, they might be defending something else too at Kobe World at this rate, as the semi-main event of the Golden Coliseum show was the double title, Open the Twin Gate, Soryu, double championship match where the Twin Gate champions, Jackie Kamei and Rita, defended their belts against the Ryukyu Dragon Pro Soryu tag team champions, the original Jimmies, Susumu Yokosuka and Kaga Tora. And now our double tag champions are Jackie Kamei and Rita with a retanic on Susumu. The case yesterday or last week, you mentioned that there were unreasonably high expectations of the semi-main event going into it, and the uncomfortable and unfair position that these four guys kind of found themselves in. And I feel like a lot of times when we have like that kind of conversation, it ends up the next time we're like, yeah, no, like it was very, very good, but it did not necessarily hit what we were going for. It was not like necessarily taking command of the moment here. But boy, I think that this Twin Gate match, it's the easy Dragon Gate match of the year at this point. And at this time, they overachieved the high expectations we had going into Aichi on Sunday.
I don't know. I don't know how they do it. I mean, I said last week, I think if this match was even at 4.5 stars, I think it would be a disappointment. And I said that 4 years ago now about Kamei and Jason versus Shun and Diamante at the Ultima 35th show. I said that this is a really unfair position to put people in. But if it's not a match of the year contender by the end of the match, it's going to be looked at as a disappointment. And they somehow again cleared that hurdle. This, as I wrote this in detail in my written review at voicesofwrestling.com, but this is the 10th career Open the Twin Gate match for Jackie Kamei. And just real quick to hit my star ratings for those 10 matches, starting with the Diamante and Shun match, 5 stars. Jason and Jackie versus Dragon Dai and Madoka Kakuta, 4.5 stars. There was a three-way tag at Gate of Destiny 2023 that I only gave 3.25 to. And then from there, Jason and Jackie versus Alejandro and Kaito Kiyomiya, 4.5 stars. The four-way tag at Kobe World 2024 with Kamei and Monte, 4.5 stars. Kamei and Rita versus Jason and Coach Minora at Bayside last year, that was 4 stars. Kamei and Rita versus Daya and Yoshioka from last November, 4.5 stars. Kamei and Rita versus Demus and Luis Monte, 4 stars. Kamei and Rita versus Daya and Marcus Mathers, 4 stars. And now here we are, his 10th Open the Twin Gate match, Kamei and Rita versus Kaga Tora and Susumu Yokosuka, 4.75 stars. I don't know how he does it. I think he's one of the 5 best wrestlers in the world, and Jackie Kamei just continues to absolutely blow me away.
It is just like, at a certain point, it has to break containment that Jackie Kamei is pound for pound one of the best wrestlers of his generation. He is someone that more people who get kind of bummed out about like the state of Japanese pro wrestling, there is goodness that is happening even in a promotion that we have been very critical about the creative decisions and the booking and that direction thereof. There has always been the fact that Jackie Rita and in particular Jackie Kamei is one of the greatest big match wrestlers of this generation. And we've seen it so many different times. And I know that he has like that hit rate with just the Twin Gate, but when you extend it out and when you go and look into other different fashions, it just becomes more and more clear that like, I don't know necessarily if it is the fact that he is not necessarily jump off the screen with the same kind of look and charisma of like a Masato Yoshino, but we're talking about someone who has gone on a stretch of tag team wrestling that I think, like, if you at least look at it the way you laid it out, Case, is better than Masato Yoshino. You know, I mean, like, it really is someone who is in that kind of discussion with Shima and Naruki Doi as like an all time, like, who are the best tag workers in this kind of promotion in this system. And I think Jackie Kamei at this point is firmly in the conversation. And it is just like, just wild to see how the, like, in this kind of match where like the way that like the Jimmys were like working very comfortably as like the veteran team, but not in a way that we would see with the All Asia, where it was like, okay, old men working over ankles and knees. This was like, okay, we're going to go and try to go for the combination that was the Ryosuke combination. We're going to go for the M2K combination. We're going to go for the Nesca combination throughout this, and having that like paired up with like the chemistry that they have with Jackie and Rita, it was just an absolutely just tremendous kind of thing to see. And like, this was a match that like at a certain point, that quote from Larry from Gateson City kind of kicked in of like, okay, we have now entered the back half of this match now. And when it hit that point, it just went to that level that you would hope for a match of this level of potential to reach. And, you know, the Susumu and Kagetora were excellent in this match as well, just to make sure that it's not just like interpreted as a one person performance. Like, Susumu and Kagetora have like in this like little run that of Paradox, like that this reuniting has been such a fun time when they decided to put the focus back on the original Jimmys. And it's just like a nice way to kind of get them into like the thick of things at a time where like up and down the card, like promotion wise, has been kind of like an uneven kind of situation, but you kind of had the original Jimmys in your back pocket to play at this kind of scenario, and the two right guys to go with your tag team that's on this generational run, and they had magic coming out of it.
It's just an incredible match. I mean, there's a number of things that I want to hit on here. I think the continued consistency of Kame and Rita, it's maddening that they've had these belts for as long as they've had them now, again, since the very beginning of November. And this is only their third defense. And as I pointed out last week, it's their first defense versus a real team. Again, it was Demus and Monte in December, which was I'll use the phrase startlingly good, not shockingly good, but startlingly good match, given that it was a cold Demus Monte Twin Gate challenge. And then Diane Mathers at least had a little bit more build to it. And that was such an odd match that, again, I compared sort of to more of a Jersey All-Pro or a CZW style match than a Ring of Honor tag team match. But it got to a point where I did feel like I was watching something great. And then they come in here, and it's why I said when they won the belts in November, I think the company should really be riding Tanaka and Kame and Rita as champions really, really hard. And I mean, Kame and Rita have a million untapped matches to go. I'm glad that we've seen Paradox with a little bit more of an edge, at least in terms of building to this match with Kagetora and Susumu, and then what Yamato has been doing with Gucci and Aki in Natural Vibes. I would hope that a match like this leads to a Yamato and Naruki Doi Twin Gate challenge at Kobe World. To me, that is the most interesting route they can go, with Kame and Rito winning that match. I would love to see, before July, I would love to see a Yoshioka Tanaka challenge. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that would really intrigue me. You could throw any of the Vibes guys in there, and I think that would be a really fun scenario. I would love Ishin and Kato against these guys. It's unbelievable they've had the belts for 6 months, and it's just so untapped. I mean, I would be interested in Minoru and Jason again, just because we haven't seen the dynamic of Kame and Rita as champions with Minoru and Jason as the challengers. I think that would be really fun.
So much. Yeah, like, and that's not even like exploring the opportunity of, you could have done a Twin Gate match in Vegas between them and Busta and the Brain. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of like other things that if you really kind of wanted to get out there and actually, you know, push the young talent that people are wanting to see internationally, like, there's a lot of stuff you really could be doing. I just think that Ryo Saito just does not see the overwhelming potential that's in front of him, and in not willing to just take the limiter and go like, okay, these two guys are on a run right now. Why not like have more Cork and Hall's main evented by Twin Gate matches of Jackie Rita? I just think that for some reason Ryo Saito does not get Jackie Kamei at the level that it seems like everyone else does.
Yeah, it's one of those Dragon Gate matches where afterwards the entire roster is tweeting about how good it is, which is, I think, the highest level of Dragon Gate wrestling possible, is when guys that weren't involved in the match are talking about how moved they were by this match, and this certainly hit that level. And yeah, I wrote this in my review. I think it is, you know, one thing for people like you and I to really be fans of Kame and Rita and to, you know, as viewers, just like what they do. But there's also the analysis portion of this where I really feel there is genuine failure on behalf of this company in not marketing Kame and Rita better. I don't even have a specific direction that I would point them in, but as I wrote in my review, they are this generation's speed muscle. And if you look at where Doi and Yoshino were in 2008, let's say, because I don't want to get into this revisionist history of, oh, well, Hulk and Shingo and Tozawa and Yoshino and Doi and Yamato, well, they were always big stars. That's not true. This company failed in 2008 to 2010 when they handed those guys the baton the first time, and it took years of Shima and Mochizuki back on top to get Yoshino and Doi and Yamato in particular in a position to where they could lead the company once again. But if you go back and watch Infinities in 2008 when they were in Muscle Outlaws, and then you watch Infinities in 2009 and 2010 when they were in World One, it's very clear that Doi and Yoshino matter into the fibers of that company. I mean, by the end of 2008, Doi's Dreamgate champions, of course he matters, but the tag team of Doi and Yoshino is ingrained in that company in a way that I don't feel like Kame and Rita are still, which is insane. And I could have said the same thing about Jason and Jackie when they were a tag team. Zero successful defenses. They won the Twin Gate belts in July. They lost them in September. I think that booking move at the time was bad. Yeah. I look back on it now and it's criminal. And luckily these guys, despite the poorly booked reign that is of no fault of their own, they've had an incredible reign where all three matches have been notebook. I think they've pushed tag team wrestling forward. And I said this in my review, I'll say it here. The fact that there's different levels of, even within our bubble or the extended bubble universe, yeah, there's different types of wrestling fandom, right? And I think one of those types of fans is somebody who primarily views Japanese wrestling by way of when those wrestlers are in America, they pay attention to them. There's a type of person, because I know them personally, that are way more into the New Japan Strong shows than they are any New Japan show that takes place in Japan. And they are way more into the New Japan guys when they are wrestling in AEW than they are when they're in Japan. Now, I don't care one way or another. I don't think that's a moral failing of them. I think they're allowed to do whatever they want to do and like whatever they want to like. That does not bother me. But I think it is a failure of this company that the type of fan that I'm speaking of now is not salivating at the idea of Jet Speed versus Kame and Rita and the Young Bucks versus Kame and Rita and whatever other AEW guys you have that you want to throw against these guys. The fact that there's not ongoing fantasy booking on a larger level about how Kame and Rita would fare in AEW, I think is a real actual failure of Dragon Gate.
Yeah, no, I mean, it like trickles down just like not only from like their booking of them, like I go back again to like the fact that it is ludicrous that they did not go to Vegas and that they have not been sent on an international trip together. Like this is like the if you want to like show like what is modern Dragon Gate, they have been modern Dragon Gate for so long that like in the best of modern Dragon Gate that it's kind of dumbfounding with that. But yeah,
I don't get it. The thing about Kame, I mean, you tell me, because I think your memory is going to be a little bit better on this.
Sure.
I'm trying to think of a big Kame match throughout his history. And it's a 6-year career now. I mean, this isn't a small sample size. And mm-hmm. given when he debuted and the oddness and of the pandemic, he's been healthy. He debuted alongside SB Kento, who was pushed very quickly. And so Kame sort of got the rub off of that. So Kame started being in big matches pretty quickly. I just don't remember a disappointing big Jackie Kame match.
No. And I'm going through just stuff that is like mentioned on Cage Match. That's of matches that it, like it is. And pretty much like at the point that he became Jackie Funky Kamei, like even though he was like at certain points before, but essentially you're talking from 2022 on, every single title match that this guy has been in has been like a big match. And,
well,
and
with historically great matches along the way, not just like another four-star effort. We're talking about a guy who is now clocking in routinely 4.5-star, 4.75-star matches with 1 5-star match in 2022. Yeah. It's not he's great. It's wrestling at the highest level.
Yeah, and I not to like say yes or no about like this website for this Cage Match. Jackie Kamei has had 798 matches according to Cage Match. He already has a match guide that is 195 matches. So just extrapolating this, 1 in 4 matches of his has at least like a listing for that. And some of that might just be for like the fact of like the infrastructure here. But then when you like look at the matches that are rated by the Cage Match users, only like a few of them are below 5. And I just looking at them right now, just on the page, none of them are title matches. It's like Daiki Yanagiuchi and Hyo versus Jackie Kamei and Ryo Fuda. Like those are the ones that are on the low end of his list. Like everything is essentially going on, he has at least as of like right now, he out of those 798 matches, 32 of them are ranked at on a Cage Match at 7 or higher. So at least, but with their metrics, at least you want to like converse it out at least 3.5 stars by a wider range for that. I wonder how many people have that kind of percentage.
It's gnarly. Again, I mean, this is a guy who throughout those 10 Twin Gate matches has an average rating of 4.25 stars, which is just absolutely maddening. In terms of the match itself, Kagetora is getting a lot of praise and rightfully so. The 10-second sequence of that slingshot dropkick he does into the lariat that he just takes Kamei's head off with is absolutely masterful wrestling. It's Kagetora at his best. He's moving as good now in 2026 as he did in 2015, which feels hard to believe. But I feel like it's an underrated Susumu Yokosuka match. And I think the fact that Susumu Yokosuka, a man who debuted in 1998, he's 28 years into his career. He debuted before I was born. The fact that Susumu Yokosuka is an active, engaged part of a 4.75 star match is something that cannot be taken lightly. And as you look among his peers, you know, this is something that I talk about a lot, but when you look at those early Dragon Gate class guys, and I'll pull up our spreadsheet with the, you know, with the Dragon Gate eras on it. I mean, Mike, you know, Shima's not having a match like this anymore. I think Dragon Kid, maybe on his best day, could have a match like this,
with
but
the
I think
right.
With the right opponent, yeah. Right setting, and it's probably not a singles match. It's probably a tag, which this
it's
was a tag.
A trios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Arakin not having kind of match like this. Genki Horiguchi certainly not having a match like this. Yasushi Kanda. Look, I still think one of the great crimes among our bubble of wrestling pundits is that more people did not watch Shuji Kondo and Kano versus Susumu Mochizuki. Look who comes up again. Susumu and Kanda in 2023, because I think that's one of the great modern Twin Gate matches. And it's
speaking
is,
of Alcapuco tornadoes.
that's right. And that is without question, undoubtedly, and it will never be beat, the single best Yasushi Kanda performance and the single best Yasushi Kanda match ever. And that happened in 2023. Again, Susumu involved there, but Kanda's never doing anything like this again. Yoshino's retired. I don't think Doi has this in him anymore, unless specifically it's Yama Doi versus Kame and Rita, and then all bets are off. You know, Yashi's not doing this, Kondo's not doing this, all these other guys are gone, and here is Susumu, who has absolutely slowed down in the same way that Masaki Mochizuki has slowed down. But Mochizuki last year was rattling off big hits. You know, we're 1 year removed from Mochizuki versus Valletta, which on a personal level is one of my favorite Masaki Mochizuki matches ever. He showed that maybe once or twice a year, he still has this in him. And Susumu, the same thing now. And it's utterly remarkable. I think he did the single greatest Jumbo no Kachi ever in this match. The only thing that would rival it would be one that he did against Shingo in the DGUK matches. I believe there was a jumbo that caused Alan Forel to lariat a pole himself. That would be the only thing in contention here. But I put the video on my Twitter of the sequence of Susumu and Rita hitting the ropes. You know, it starts with Kagetora hitting his finish on Kame. Rita breaks that pin up with just a leaping double stomp, and that paves the way for a sequence between Susumu and Rita that ends with one of the gnarliest Jumbo no Kachis, one of the gnarliest lariats that I've ever seen in wrestling history. 4 3/4, match of the year contender. I know this match is getting passed around a little bit. I really hope the right people that do 3-hour podcasts every week on the state of global wrestling, people that write newsletters on the state of global wrestling, I really hope those people watch this match this week and it gets even more buzz by the time we talk again 7 days from now.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm 4 3/4 on it. Just the best thing in Dragon Gate all year. And I think it'll probably end up being the best thing in Dragon Gate all year. And I wonder what Jackie Rita can do to top this case, because the Triple Crown is still available. I don't see it.
I honestly,
do you think that Rising Hayato and Atsuki Aoyagi are going to take the belts back, and we're in this fever dream of Jay and Mai is going to be put to bed?
Is that a match that's booked?
Yep, because they won the Junior Tag Battle of Glory, and they haven't had that title match for it yet.
So it's Hayato and Aoyagi.
Yep.
Oh, okay. All right, that makes me feel better. They'll beat Horiguchi and Kanda. That would be, I mean, if Horiguchi wins that match, then like we have to have a conversation about the power that he's wielding in Japanese wrestling right now.
Yeah, and why is he choosing to wield it now and not 14 years ago?
He's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and I fucking hate him right now. I can't stand watching Genki Horiguchi right now. So I hope that's not the case. Okay, that makes me feel better. Because if it's an all-Asia match with Kanda and Horiguchi against Kame and Rita, Kanda and Horiguchi are winning that match. Kame and Rita are not going to be all-Asia tag team champions. I just don't see it happening.
If I keep on putting this thought out in the universe, it's going to happen, Gaze.
I don't know. I am not into it as much. I would much rather, again, I mean, the possibilities feel endless for World this year. I selfishly, just because I like this team so much and I like what they do in 2-on-2 settings, I would really hope that they gum up the works with the Triangle Gate match and fit a bunch of guys into that match and not the Twin Gate match. Maybe the roster is so depleted at this point that they can't do that and we get a 3-on-3 Triangle Gate match and a 2-on-2 Twin Gate match. I would just prefer that. But I really hope that this isn't one of those years where we have a really muddy Twin Gate match where we end up with, you know, BB Hulk and Kagetora and Monte and Kimura and who, you know, whoever else is there. I would like for it to be a focused build to a huge Twin Gate match at World. And I think that would help put people in the building. I mean, you and I didn't go to Vegas this year because Kame and Rito weren't there. These guys are draws on that level. I know there are people in Kobe that are looking towards what they're going to do at that show that will determine whether or not they're there.
Yeah, no. I am totally with you and co-sign with what you're saying here with that. Brave Gate, Ryoya Tanaka got his V10 as we were expecting, but the match with UT was a spicy number. The official time of the Brave Gate match was only 6 minutes and 43 seconds, but boy, did they pack it in there for that 6 minutes and 43 seconds. UT, in his first match in well over a month since March 28th, ends up being that his back injury is actually a lot more severe neck injury that it felt like that this was a he had this, but this match was booked back in March and that they were going to have it. And this is UT's hometown where famously he finally won the Brave Gate at last year. But Ryoya Tanaka is at this point the second greatest Brave Gate champion of all time. And he put him down in 6 minutes and 34 seconds in a brutal fashion into a kneeling crossface to get the win here. And it was not one of the all-time sprint matches, but boy, it was 3.5 stars, and I absolutely adored it, Case. Like, the rotación into Fuego into Bienyave before the 5-minute call, I was like, oh, is UT actually going to do this? And I did not think I was going to have a single moment in this match where the thought even crossed my mind that Ryo Tanaka was going to lose the Brave Gate. But they got me for a moment, and that's more than any of the other title matches got me on the show other than the Twin Gate.
I thought this match was incredible. I couldn't believe when I started writing my review, I went to go see the match time, and I couldn't believe it was only 6 minutes, because it was worked not like Kenta versus Ricky Marvin. It felt really full. It almost felt like, sometimes you hear like a Green Day song or a Ramon song that you really like, and it feels like a proper song, like a full length song, like a full length thought. And then you look and it's only 2 minutes and 15 seconds. You go, wow, that's a really short song. And this was sort of the wrestling version of that, where they did everything they could possibly do, not in terms of excess, but in terms of execution. They did everything they could possibly do in a 6-minute time frame. And I get the feeling, based on the English commentary, that this is going to be the last we see of UT for quite a while. I thought he was brilliant in this match, and I thought the finish of the kneeling crossface on a guy who has an injured neck was excellent. And that's the sort of thing that, historically, those are the things that I'll be taking away from this Tanaka reign, is just the little wrinkles like that from a match by match perspective.
Yeah, just the way that he got kind of indignant and like fought his ways out of like the Hikari no Wa, and just being like, no, I'm not going to fall for this, and just like going for like the cross sabers and going like, okay, no, I'm, even though like UT basically has spent this last month preparing for these kinds of things, I'm not able to do this. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go after this guy's neck. And if his neck is so bad like this, I'm going to find ways to get into the crossface. And there was even like a moment where you could see like UT kind of adjust and make it look even more kind of gruesome looking. And it was just like, the expectations, like given like the state of UT, and like UT instead deciding to have Dragon System mindset, and well, I worry about how he's going to be getting around in 30 years, but at least for Sunday night, he was willing to kind of lay it all out there. And you know how big these matches in Nagoya are for like UT and like the UT kind of like sponsorship kind of thing. So I'm glad that there was a respectable kind of match that came out of it, and one that like left more of a impact than I think that we were anticipating whatsoever.
Thought it was great. I love that Tanaka's 10 defenses deep and all 10 matches feel really different. And he has that Arakin match from earlier this month that wasn't a title match, but that was a Tanaka singles match that felt really out of left field to even all of the other things that he's done. I think he's had an incredible year, and I'm really, really excited to see what they do in June and July for this guy. Because I would imagine Dragon Kid at Kobe World feels like the route they're going to go now, which leaves an opening at one of those two June Korakuen shows. I would like to see Gucci get a Brave Gate match. That would scratch an itch for me. I would like to see Kagetora in the mix. Is there anybody that he hasn't wrestled yet that you're really dying to see him wrestle?
Kagetora and Gucci are like the kind of clear ones. I don't think Kimura would get that opportunity, but I'd be intrigued at like, I liked the match that the two of them had, and it felt like that they had more in the tank in particular, but I don't think it's time for that match. Mm-hmm. Like that's the shame of like that. And I mean, there's a part of me that wonders, like, are they going to kind of put him in a position that DK for 11 happens in June, and he has to face a best of the super juniors returning Hyo for 12 to become number one.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like that. That's good.
Because like, that's the only other like person by this, like I would say for Hyo, I want Hyo to move upwards in the card and not be back in the Brave Gate kind of division, but it does kind of feel like the kind of thing that they would like to do given past history and booking.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, I'm on board with that.
Triangle Gate match, Natural Vibes, Akazi, Gucci, and Aki defending against Takashi, Mandai Ryu, and freelancer Koji Iwamoto in a match that I mean, overachieved at least for me, case. I ended up really kind of enjoying this one. It was the first successful defense for Natural Vibes. Aki won with his spine buster, which is called the Starburst on Mandai Ryu. The one thing about the Nagoya crowd, the one like misstep was I don't think they bought the spine buster as the finish, even though it was a really great looking spine buster. In case am I a sicko, or do I, or am I wrong thinking that we should invite Koji Iwamoto around a lot more? Because I really enjoyed the amount of Iwamoto versus Natural Vibes in this match. Like, I thought he did. I thought him and Gucci and KZ were great.
Oh, Iwamoto's great. I mean, he had a great match against Shima a few years ago. He had a great match with Susumu a few years before that. He has a very good track record of working with these Dragon System guys. And I thought he was spectacular in this match. I mean, the amount of weight that he was forced to pull given his two incompetent tag team partners. Yeah, it's amazing this match was as good as it was. Now, you're absolutely right about the Aki thing. It worked in February at Uno Dos Tres because it was such a surprise that it got sort of a shock pop. Nobody really saw it coming when he hit Bim with a spine buster and then won with that. And it was the first time that he had used it. And so for that reason, it worked. Now it just comes across like a flat finish. They have not established that spine buster on the road in any sort of meaningful way, because it caught me by surprise in this match as well.
Yeah. And you write about it in a review, like this match, really the match was really good when Iwamoto was in. And then whenever it was Takashi, which there was not a lot of, or Problem Dragon who tried, it just like, he's just not at that level anymore. Like, it was, that's when the match kind of was a little bit off. But when it got back into really Iwamoto being involved with the guys, it was a really good time. It is something where, like, I don't get why they have not, like, with the spine buster getting it over, like, Natural Vibes winning matches quickly because he hits the spine buster out of nowhere and winning. Like, it that's how you get this kind of move over as this kind of finish in a company like this. Like, why haven't they been doing that?
It's odd that Aki is the one winning these Triangle Gate matches, because so much of the focus and so much of the important stuff happening in Vibes right now is going through Gucci. And I would think, you know, like, I wouldn't think less of Aki if Gucci was the one scoring the falls in these matches. But now that Gucci's not scoring the falls in these matches, I find it to be a little weird. You know, I wish he was in a spot where he was doing that, and it's just not happening. And I find that to be strange. I would much rather them focus on establishing Gucci's finisher right now rather than whatever Aki's doing. Aki's time will come. He's still developing, and he doesn't need any more spotlight than he has. Gucci, it feels like there's a pressure valve there, and they could do something bigger with him in the very near future.
Yep, I'm totally with you on that. And then we got into our undercard matches, highlighted by the special singles match, Yuki Oshioka versus Strong Machine J. And we are now in Yuki Oshioka Kobe World main event watch. It is on at this point. I would put the color setting at a strong yellow at this portion, because Yuki Oshioka went in a very convincing fashion, doing a high fly attack and then the high fly flow on Strong Machine J in a match that was not necessarily anything like a special singles match that you would expect on a big card. Instead, it just felt like that this was the singles match on the show, and Yoshioka is the one that's going to be getting kind of pushed, and Strong Machine J was the one kind of left out, so he took the fall here.
I thought this match was really flat. I was very, very confused by both guys' output. It's just not the match that either of them needed to have, or quite frankly, I think could afford to have in this setting. It was a big time singles match, and it's odd, and I don't know if this is a Dragon Gate specific thing. I don't feel like it is, because I feel like if KZ was in this spot, or Shun was in this spot, or Yamato's never in this spot, but it would be so exciting if he were in this spot, or even somebody like Monte, I know sometimes these undercard singles matches can feel a little bit rushed and like we're not getting this fully fleshed out singles match between two big guys, but that's no excuse to have, I mean, look, a perfectly passable match. I mean, 3.25 stars, but it's 3.25 stars with two guys that 3 years ago we had a show closing promo where they said they were leading the charge of the future. And this was not that.
No. Like it felt like this could have been a situation that for like the overall kind of Dreamgate situation that it would be like, oh, hey, Kakuta does not have an upcoming opponent. Like this is, and it's something that I think that Tony Khan did really well this year in 2026 with AEW, be like, okay, these are matches that have, you know, future title match stakes, or like you're winning these matches and they're drawing focus to those singles matches, and they kind of became eliminators and almost eliminator tournament in a kind of way. And that was not what happened whatsoever in this match. It just felt like that they hit their time cue and it was time to go home. And, you know, it was 10 minutes and it never had a level of depth to it and or a level of really aggression whatsoever. It felt like almost in a way like an exhibition match. Like I went 3.25 on it, but it was not it was a disappointing 3.25.
So I guess let me put it to you this way. You know, you and I think, correct me if I'm wrong. Although it would really intrigue, I think, both you and I, it feels like we're moving further away from the idea of Kakuta versus Tanaka at Kobe World.
No, I don't think that's happening at this point.
And it feels like, especially given how this match was worked, that we're inching closer towards what will be Kakuta versus Yoshioka 4 and Kakuta versus Yoshioka 2 at Kobe World.
Right. That's what it kind of felt like. It almost like in a way, it's like, and remember Yuki Yoshioka got this win here because he's going to be getting a lot of wins because we are 2 months from Kobe World and he's going to be the main event.
So you and I are on the same page with that. And mm-hmm. In the course of this podcast, after spending 20 minutes talking about Kame and Rita and even Susumu and Kagetora and how exciting they are, how great Tanaka is, UT powering through that neck injury, I described our current Open the Dreamgate champion as working the main event cage match as like Togi Makabe on a Road 2 show, and you described the possible challenger in a special singles match as working it like an exhibition. If that is not reason enough to change the plans for July, I don't know what is. It's not like these guys are Misawa and Kobashi, and no matter how the build is, they're going to be able to wait to figure out magic. I would argue the opposite. I would argue they had a pretty good build to a match in February, and I still didn't like the match in February that much. For whatever reason, these guys don't have good chemistry together, and I think we are at risk of an ice fucking cold Kobe World main event this year.
Yeah, and I guess like the other just frustrating thing about it is like we're this far out. You could build it around and change it up for it, but
you could do
not.
Anything. You could. Yeah. I mean, I would be more intrigued at this point.
I think they have like four Korkins between now and Kobe World. You can do anything.
You've got four. You've got May. You've got two in June. You've got one in July because it's a little bit later in July this year. Yeah, you know, I know there's been a few years where Kobe World in July is so early that it predates the Korkin, but not this year. I mean, I'm more intrigued by Shun versus Kakuta at this point. I think Hamare would be box office suicide, but I would obviously be more intrigued by Hamare versus Kakuta at this point. Even if we operate under the caveat and with the asterisks that, hey, maybe Big Boss Shimizu was supposed to win the Dreamgate title in April, it certainly seemed like they were at least moving in a direction where that was a possibility. And given when the Gaja Dokuro produce show was booked, Jay's comments about Shimizu's injury being at a bad time, and the seeming pivot to Kai versus Kakuta instead of what seemed like it would have been Shimizu versus Kakuta. Okay, maybe that's why Yoshioka doesn't win the belt in February. I still think that would have been the right choice, and I still think you could have done Kakuta to Yoshioka to Shimizu immediately. I had that whole thing mapped out where Yoshioka could have won the belt on February 23rd. They're in Osaka the next week. They could have done Shimizu versus Yoshioka then. This is before Shimizu got hurt. He's still an active roster member at this point. This is right around the time that he got hurt, maybe. And you could have put the belt on Shimizu right after that without doing Shimizu versus Kakuta. You still could have had Yoshioka win in February. I think it's a colossal mistake. I think Kakuta, you know, probably a year from now will be involved in an awesome Twin Gate team and will be singing his praises. But I am just so far emotionally detached from him as a Dream Gate champion. And Yoshioka, whom I like and oftentimes actively defend, gave me no ammunition whatsoever with his performance in this match.
No, I'm with you on that. The next undercard match was the touch football match of the evening. Masaaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, Azushi Kanda, and Genki Horiguchi versus Yamato, Dragon Kid, Naruki Doi, and Punch Toma Naga. It was a backslide from heaven for Genki Horiguchi, who is now within Western Japan the strongest booked wrestler in all of wrestling right now.
I don't get it. I wish I understood it. I don't know. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah. And the rest of it felt like that these were kind of that paradox was on the way out for the show. So they just kind of are here adrift on the undercard. The special singles match also we had on the card under this was the Sugihara Trading Company's best employee contest between every day the fighting salarymen, Jiro Shinbashi, and the career woman herself, Jungle Kiona. Jiro Shinbashi lost this match due to a sexual harassment violation when he ripped off his shirt in front of Jungle Kiona. And it was all kind of based off of a lot of comedy on Jungle Kiona being a career woman with Junior and Fuda being her assistants. And apparently Jiro Shinbashi is an awful employee.
I found the finish of this match to be genuinely so funny. It caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting it. I laughed out loud at Shinbashi ripping his shirt off and getting disqualified. I thought that was hilarious.
I mean, like, it. You kind of see it's, the thought kind of crossed your mind right before it happened, did it? Because
no,
for me,
no, I didn't see it coming at all, and that's why it got me so bad. That is the last thing I would have guessed, and it just killed me. Job well done.
It was tremendous, and you know who also should get some credit for this? Yagi as the referee in this thing. Like, he wasn't corpsing, like, he played it all completely straight, and that added a whole lot to it. And at least for someone who really enjoyed that era of Stardom, seeing Jungle Kiona at least around and her knee not exploded was a kind of a nice thing to see. I know she's back full-time coming up at the Hanakamura show, but she had a tough road getting back to kind of wrestle full time. And it was kind of at least nice to see that she was able to do a Dragon Gate comedy match.
I have breaking news from the world of Zen Nippon, Mike Spears.
Oh, boy. This could literally be anything.
Did they have a date booked for the All Asia tag match?
No.
Okay.
Or not one that I was aware of. I've been mostly AFK for the last like 6 days. So I haven't seen anything other than when Jay mentioned it on commentary.
I see that Rising Hayato has a knee injury and he will be out for at least the next three shows as of this recording date, which is April 28th. So maybe Genki Horiguchi has some voodoo dolls we don't know about also, and he doesn't want to give up these All Asia tag belts yet. It seemed like we had an exit ramp figured out for these belts, and we had an exit ramp for Genki Horiguchi to lose a match. And I am afraid that we have veered into another direction.
Yeah, no, Genki Horiguchi is going to be the king of any wrestling that happens west of Osaka in Japan. Like, you just can't beat him when you get west of Osaka. Okay,
unbelievable. So, unbelievable.
I mean, it's a good thing we've already done the big show in Fukuoka already this year.
Because, yeah, boy, where he got a fucking title match.
See, he has some powers over Western Japan. Well, we should be lucky he doesn't extend into Kobe, man. You know,
you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah. And we opened this show with another batch of, OK, we weren't doing a lot, so y'all are in openers. At least that was the case for Gaja Dokuro, as it was Ishin Kai and Jason Lee going up against this is originally going to be Benkei and Hio and Luis Monte. Benkei got hurt in the United States, and it was Kazuma Kimura instead joining them for this. And Hio gets the win with a hunting, which he got almost... It felt like that, at least over Vegas, that like, that was kind of the finish for him. So I guess like it's kind of getting it in everyone's mind that hunting might be his finishing move for Best of the Super Juniors. That was kind of my takeaway from this match.
I would agree with that. I think that's great analysis. I think that's something to absolutely look out for, which I think is the correct move. I think the Samson driver is not the greatest finisher, and I think hunting is going to work really well in Super Juniors. This was, I guess, a rare Kazuma Kimura performance where I felt like he was actually outshined by somebody else in the match, and that person was Hio, who I thought was stellar. So I am, you know, we don't spend a lot of time covering Dragon Gate wrestlers and other Japanese promotions on this show, just because a lot of the time it doesn't, I can't speak for Mike, but it doesn't particularly interest me a ton. Hio and Super Juniors, I'm super into, and we will be talking about that as it occurs.
Oh, I feel like that for us, like 10 years ago, finding a young Hio Watanabe as a wrestler, then like 10 years later, he, after all of this, becoming Best of the Super Juniors or entering that, like we're going to devote some time to his Best of the Super Juniors, at least for us to, as a case of self-indulgence.
It's a shame that, you know, I think the lineup is as poor as it is. There's a different version of Hio and the Super Juniors that I'd be really, really excited about, or I guess rather Hio and a different version of the Super Juniors. But you're right. It's 10 years of Hio. You and I, for many years, were his only two fans. He's earned the coverage on Open the Voice Gate, and I'm looking forward to breaking that down when it happens. Is there even... So, let me look at that block real quick. I'm sorry. Is there even a Hio match that I'm excited about? Let me pull up the lineup here real quick and see... Because I don't think we have the lineups out yet. We don't have the lineup, so I can't target Hio's going to be in Cork and doing this.
No, yeah, I don't think they've announced that far. I don't even remember offhand the blocks.
Okay, so Hio's in the B block. So okay. It's the perpetually overrated El Desperado. It's Kushida, Yo, Robbie Eagles, Taiji Ishimori, Jacob Austin Young. I had to rub my eyes together. The way that New Japan has his graphic and this neon lettering, I could not make that out to save my life. Jacob Austin Young.
Dangerous J.
Yes. Sho, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Daisuke Sasaki. Oh, man, that is just not...
Kushida, Eagles, Ishimori, rematch, and Yo, potentially.
I can't do the Yo thing. I would say Desperado potentially, but I just have a lower ceiling.
I would put Desperado
on
and Yo on the same kind of tier, but I think Kushida, Eagles, and Ishimori are the three matches.
They probably do Hio versus Ishimori and Corkin and give Hio a big win.
Mm-hmm.
And then they probably stick Hio versus Kushida and like Nagata or something. Oh, I mean, that would make sense. I would love it if they did that. I'm afraid it's going to be, you know, in an ice cold building in the middle of the tour on like match number two. But Hio versus
Kushida on paper. Kanemaru gets Hio and Kobe, brother, and you like it.
Exactly. It's going to be Sasaki and Kobe. It's because I don't want to watch Sasaki. This. Kanemaru, I guess we've sort of passed the point where there was a point in time where Kanemaru was like sneaky fun, and now I think it's flipped where he's a better idea on paper than he is in execution. So Kanemaru would be a real bummer if that happened in Kobe. Look, I would love it if they did the Kushida match there, but I don't, you know, New Japan doesn't do anything that appeals to me, so why would they do that?
Yeah, we can't have nice things, but we actually can have one nice thing, Case.
You know, I'm going to cut you off one more time. You've nailed two transitions. I've ruined both of them.
I will say I had the perfect transition out of Best of the Super Juniors.
You nailed it. And I cut you off twice, and it's just how it has to be. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's good.
It sucks.
Good.
I feel bad about it, but I'm going to keep talking.
No, yeah, okay.
It is such a bummer that Hio and Valiente Jr. are in different blocks. That is the match that I want to see. I want to see Hio and Akira and Hio and Valiente Jr. And we are getting neither of them. Thank you, New Japan Booking. You continue to utterly confound me. I do not understand you.
Yeah. We get like one nice thing, and then we get three things that are absolutely dreadful.
But, that's literally how it is. I watch these shows, yeah. And I'm just like, oh, okay, all right. Well, I liked that one thing that happened, but there's four other decisions that completely lose my interest. I guess I'll check back into New Japan in 6 weeks.
You're like, okay, Knockout Brothers remain tight. Okay, let's move along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. So
I was hoping you were going to have a third one.
I was trying to pull one out here, but usually when there's a press release that comes out right after a big show, at least historically, I would say that our usual response to hearing that this is coming is anxiety. It's usually a lot of consternation, and it's usually of, oh God, what's going to happen next year? And especially around Dead or Alive. Dead or Alive historically had a lot of kind of unpleasant things to report after it goes off the air. That's not the case. That is not the case because we have, and I wanted to get the exact time here. It was 5:50 Central Time. There was a release on social media from Dragon Gate that I will read translations of two of the quotations in a second, but lo and behold, the Magnum Tokyo saga may already be over, Case, as Magnum Tokyo and President Toru Kido have come to meet and have a conversation where, at the very least, it seems that all of the negativity that went into the talk show from March that we covered extensively, all of that seems to be being put behind them coming out of this meeting in Nagoya, because Magnum Tokyo was in Nagoya also because he is Shima's co-host on a talk show that happened at the same time as Golden Coliseum.
It's not what I expected to see at the end of mm-hmm. the day. I did not expect to see a photo of Kido and Magnum Tokyo together unless it was inside the octagon. So, I mean, look, this is a monumental thing for Dragon Gate. I mean, before there was the OWE split and the Shima erasure that this company has participated in over the last 8 years, there has been now for 20 years, it'll be 20 years in the fall, there has been this rift with Magnum Tokyo, which has always been an incredibly awkward thing for the history of this promotion, because Magnum Tokyo was number one. He was the prized pupil in Mexico. It's funny, I've been reading the Mexico sections of old Observers lately to coincide with some footage that I'm watching, but also, again, just trying to have a better grasp of the history of Lucha Libre. And there's a point in 98 and 99 where Dave is like weirdly plugged into IWRG and he's talking about, Magnum Tokyo and pressing people in Nakampon. And it's odd because, and through no fault of his own, because Indy Lucha is in such a terrible position right now. But like, Dave's not paying attention to IWRG now, but in 98 and 99, he really sort of knows what's going on. And a lot of it is based around the booking of Magnum and how strong he was booked before Toriumon had landed in Japan and then shortly after. And, this is a guy who, at least through Toriumon, was at worst your 1B figurehead throughout the entire history of that promotion. And then as things got into Dragon Gate, he had, I would say, a more impactful presence behind the scenes than in front of the camera throughout his 3 years that he was a Dragon Gate wrestler. But it's always been bad. I mean, you and I have discussed this for years now. There was just a point in time where Magnum was completely off of the grid, and you and I would hear rumblings here and there about either what he was doing professionally or what his health was like. And it was never exactly like, hey, you know who's killing it? Magnum Tokyo. It was a very odd life and a very odd existence. And for him to sort of resurface in the way that he has over the last year or so, just in terms of being around friends and being seen in public and having, photos of him on Twitter, which was just something that for a decade we did not have, has been a nice thing to see. And then the story took a turn in March. We did a podcast covering that extensively on this feed. If you have not heard it, we break down everything that Shima and Magnum said, why this talk show happened the same day as Golden Coliseum, why Kido showed up at this talk show, why all of that matters is on that podcast. But it's a weirdly monumental and historic thing for Magnum and Kido to at least have some sort of verbal ceasefire worked out right now.
Yeah, and at the very least, this is, I mean, this was the longest festering wound in the Dragon system. That at the very least, like, we can't, like, I was off the grid, basically, or off wrestling grid a lot over this weekend. But the one thing that, like, I heard before watching Golden Coliseum, unspoiled, was, oh yeah, something's happening with Magnum Tokyo. And then I kind of went in and looked at it, and I was like, oh, okay, so this wasn't like him showing up at a show. This is not him, you know, coming out and waving and doing like the handshake with Kido in front of everyone. This instead is kind of the way that Dragon Gate sometimes does these things. And at least, like, if you're looking at like where the temperature is, at least over the period of the last month, this is as if they've had a pot of boiling water and they stuck it outside in a blizzard. And it's not necessarily a case where that's now completely frozen cold, and there's still probably some hot water underneath whatever ice that forms pretty quickly, case. But at the very least, like, there is something to kind of build on. If you keep this pot out in the cold, eventually it's going to be completely frozen solid, and you could stand on it. Like, you can't stand on it now, but at the very least, it's not a boiling pot of water that it was for the last month. And I think that that is a really kind of strong piece of encouragement. If you give me a second, I'll read the exact statements put out both by Magnum Tokyo and Dragon Gate. But
So look at that for just a second, because I'll summarize this here really quickly in terms of why this might matter going forward. And if you're not somebody who has any historical knowledge of Magnum, or if you don't even really care about this situation, which I would completely understand,
The one thing that I have discovered over at least this part of the Shima Magnitude saga, if you come to the show because that there is a level of wrestling drama and gossip that always kind of happens in Dragon Gate that at least scratches that animal itch, there is something about this situation that's still kind of evolving.
Yes, and I think the tangible thing we can begin to speculate on, because, hey, they shook hands, they took a photo, cool. I think the two things that are relevant to this situation in terms of things that we could actually see change are, one, a year from now, for Shima's 30th anniversary, a Shima retirement in a Dragon Gate ring. And that seems like the thing that Shima has been angling for. It's why the Magnum talk show in March was so funny, because Shima has started floating that idea out there, and then Magnum went completely scorched earth and changed everything. And so it suddenly felt like that really wasn't a possibility. This opens up the idea of Shima and Magnum being in a Dragon Gate ring. My thought would be next May for Shima's 30th anniversary and for his eventual retirement match. I think that's huge. The other thing that this plays into is the statement from Dragon Daya saying that as of March 31st, all of his obligations and relationships with Dragon Gate have been severed, and that Dragon Daya going forward is, from my understanding, free to do whatever he'd like to do now. And that ties into what Magnum was saying in March.
Yeah, and if you were wondering what my first segue was going to be, Case, it was, well, Best of the Super Juniors could have been a completely different looking field if this thing that happened that we were about to talk about happened last month versus this month.
Yeah, Daya, absolutely.
Because Daya would be in Best of the Super Juniors right now. But yeah, so the full statements first from Magnum Tokyo to all fans and concerned parties. It has been 19 years since the announcement of my, quote, retirement, which is as close as possible as to being forced. Today, I had the possibility to meet directly with Dragon Gate President Kido and speak with him regarding the events of that time, as well as the series of matters surrounding this situation. We openly and honestly shared our feelings with each other without holding anything back. In the course of that, we carefully confirmed each point where our understandings differed one by one, and ultimately arrived at an amicable resolution in a way that both sides can understand and accept. My in-ring career was really brief, but my love for Toriumon still remains with me even now. When we finished speaking, the sense of regret I carry for many years cleared, and I was overcome with emotion. I feel that I have now been able to see my way of life through to the end. I also promised President Kido that further that toward the further development of Dragon Gate going forward, I'll not hesitate to offer whatever cooperation I can provide. At the same time, I strongly convey the need to improve the internal environment of the organization and to promote the overall health of the industry, and I'm confident this was deeply understood. Finally, I would like to express my gratitude to my ally H, who helped pave the way toward this resolution, Magnum Tokyo. H, I believe, is Hatayama, the ticket, the former Dragon Season ticket seller or ticket department guy that was mentioned in the first talk show extensively.
Yeah, we explained kind of who he was and the context behind his involvement in all of this in the podcast we did on the March talk show.
Right. And then Dragon Gate statement to all fans concerned parties. This is a report from Toru Kido. We would like to express our sincere gratitude for your continued support of Dragon Gate's activities. The other day, we held a direct meeting with Magnum Tokyo regarding the series of matters where we had an opportunity to speak face-to-face. We went carefully over each of our feelings and the sequence of events at the time, one by one. During this process, we were strongly able to feel Magnum Tokyo's sentiments towards our company's deep affection for the younger wrestlers. Additionally, regarding matters regarding myself personally, we receive understanding that certain points were based on misunderstandings. After both sides have reached mutual acceptance, we have arrived at a resolution. Furthermore, we have also received his words that he will not hesitate to lend his support regarding the cooperation of the organization going forward. We sincerely apologize to all the fans and related parties for the great concern and inconvenience the situation has caused, and we humbly ask for your continued support of Dragon Gate's activities going forward. Dragon Gate Incorporated, resident director Toru Kido.
Never thought I'd see the day. You know, I don't have a ton else to add other than that. I think it is something that, especially if you're somebody who's listening to this, but maybe didn't listen to our March talk show podcast on the Shima Magnum talk show, go back and listen to that. And to think about even the fact that we've gotten here in a month,
yeah,
is astounding.
Yeah, and we will be talking a lot more about this in future weeks with other interested parties who have some more to share about this. But it makes you kind of wonder how much like this happening with Daya at the same time accelerated things, because other than Yamato rampaging on and on about people having to uphold their contracts, the overall optics of the Daya situation were universally bad. And having that 1-2 punch, I think maybe makes the company consider things that maybe they would not be considering if things weren't happening in such a manner.
I would agree with that.
Any other thoughts or takes on the Daya news?
We'll have more to say on this probably 2 weeks from now. But no, I that's all for now. I think the Magnum stuff is in a way incredible, and I think it directly correlates to the Daya news as well.
Yeah, no, I am with you on that. And Case, unless you have anything else, I think that's going to do it for this week. The next time that they are on the network, we will be back talking. We'll be in Golden Week proper. They do have two shows coming up next week at KBS Hall.
Looking forward to it.
All right. You could follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. You could follow Case on Twitter at _ in your case. You could follow me at Fujihaya. You could also follow along with the show on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. We have our own Open the Voice Gate channel where we have all of our show posting whenever we do those days, as well as all of our historical content, match listings, all of that's in the Voices of Wrestling Discord in the Open the Voice Gate channel. But that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back with you next time. Take care, everyone.
Wrestling Omakase brings you a full course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Glate, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.